Let me just mention something that's kind of unfortunate, but we have to deal with it. Hami Hawad, who was just recently released, he's one of the torture victims who was released that we're celebrating here today, was denied by his parole officer to come to this rally. So we have to keep on protesting. They won't let us rest. But we have someone who is also a survivor of torture who will speak in his stead. And that brother is a very powerful brother, and his name is Gregory Banks. So I want you to give him a warm welcome, Gregory Banks.
Good afternoon, everybody. And happy Father's Day to the ones that are fathers out there. It's always hard when it comes to me talking about the torture. First of all, let me say giving honor to God, who is now the head of my life. It took me a long time to get to that point because I was angry at God for what I went through. I was angry for a long time, so I pushed that out of the way. But now I say giving honor to God because there is a God. And to the shepherd of this house, y'all just heard him speak, Dr. Moss, in his absence. In 1983, I was arrested and I was taken to Area 3 Violent Crime. Located on 111 in Ellis. And I was taken to an interviewing room, and I was handcuffed to a ring in the wall for maybe 4 or 5 hours, maybe a little longer than that, I don't know. But at approximately maybe 2:30 in the morning, they came and took me out of that room and put me in an adjacent room, and they set me down. It was 3 detectives. One of them, his name is John Byrne. John Byrne was a sergeant. He was the crew leader at that time. That night, he was the crew leader. Peter Dignan and Charles Grunhart. And Sergeant Byrne set me down in a chair, and he told me, he said, "We know you did it. We just want you to tell us why you did it." And so when I persisted in denial, he took out a nickel-plated 45, and he stuck it in my mouth. And remember, I'm 20 years old, so I'm frightened. I don't know how to respond. I don't even know what to say. When I persisted in denial, he took out a flashlight about this long, a black flashlight, and he began to beat me across my chest and my back. I fell out of the chair. And Charles Grunhart, which was the oldest of the three, he began to kick me and step on me. And so when I continued to persist in denial, Peter Dignan, and I said that I will never, ever forget Peter Dignan. Peter Dignan said, "We have something special for niggers." And he took out a plastic bag, and they placed it over my head. While I'm handcuffed on the ground, defenseless, can't do anything, and I passed out. At that time, they left out of the room. Now, I'm not the only person that they done did that to. They got a little black box, too. And on this black box, it has some kind of lever on it. And they take this box, and they got tweezers on the end of them. They either put them on your earlobes or they put them on your testicles, and they turn this box, and electricity flies through your body like you're being electrocuted. And so they left out of the room. They come back, and they did it again, and I told them that I will tell them whatever they wanted to know. I will sign whatever they wanted anyway, because I wanted my life. I'm 20 years old. I didn't know what they was going to do. So anyway, as time went on, I was transported 4 days later to October the 31st. I was transported to Cook County Jail, and when I got to Cook County Jail, a paramedic seen me. And when the paramedic seen him, he seen all his bruises on my body. I was swollen up. I couldn't even walk. I could barely raise my legs. I slid across the floor. But anyway, he told me when I get upstairs, whatever division I was in, which was 5 at that time, he told me to tell the paramedics that what happened to me. So I told, went 5 days, 4 days went past. It was November the 4th, and I got a chance to see a paramedic. So he sent me downstairs, and I got an opportunity to see Dr. Roman. And Dr. Roman examined me, and during that period of time, Dr. Roman, when I told him I had been tortured by the Chicago Police Department, he sent it to his supervisor, and that's the Officers of Professional Standards coming to the picture then. They are no longer in power anymore. It's another organization now. So anyway, Sharon Tom came to see me, and she asked me, could I identify the detectives that did that to me? I picked them out, and anyway, I went to trial, and I was convicted, and I was sentenced to 50 years in the Illinois Department of Correction. And that was hard, y'all. That was really, really, really hard. It was more than anything, it was devastating to my family. It did more harm to them than it did to me, because they were devastated. I want to tell y'all this story, but I just ain't got the time to tell you. So thank you for listening to that part of it. Thank you.
Esther Hernandez, she's the mother of Juan and Rosendo, who were wrongfully convicted based on torture confessions. Let's give it up for Esther.
So I wrote my speech because I know we don't have much time, so I will read it, okay? Happy Father's Day to all the fathers here. Greetings, everyone. My name is Esther Hernandez. I am the founder of Innocent Demands Justice. First, I would like to thank my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, who gives me the strength daily to get up and do what I do. Second, I would like to thank the Chicago Alliance for hosting this event, and I am honored to have been asked to speak. I would like to just give you a brief idea of what Innocent Demands Justice is about. In 1997, corrupted Chicago police detectives stole my 2 sons, Juan and Rosendo Hernandez, from me, and they were framed for a murder they did not commit. Now, I must say that I am not highly educated, never attended college, have no degrees, but one thing I did have was the love for my children and determination to fight to prove their innocence. So my son Juan, while in jail, found out about this group of people who were family members of other men who were framed by the same detectives from Area 5, Grand and Central Police Station, led by Detective Renato Guevara. I began to go to these meetings, and I couldn't believe these types of things went on. Had my son not been framed, I would have never been clueless about innocent people in prison. We would like to believe that if a person is in prison, they must be guilty. As I listened to family speak of their loved ones, I became angry at this so-called justice system. At that moment, I knew what my calling was. Years passed, and the group despaired. And one day, my son calls me and tells me he has met many men in prison who are also innocent. And many of them have no one to be their voices. So we decided to create Innocent Demands Justice. We started with just the thought, and now we support over 50 men and women who have shown more likely than not they were framed. Throughout these years, I have witnessed the Chicago Alliance do the same thing, and we have made a difference by standing together and pressuring the city of Chicago to do the right thing. We have ways to go, higher mountains to climb, but I have vowed to continue the fight until every innocent person is free. Together we can conquer all things through Christ who strengthens us. So I would like to encourage all of you who are searching for a purpose in life to step up and be a voice for the voiceless. Be a representative of justice. Silence is not an option. We have the power and the numbers to put it into office, to put into office those who will listen and do what's right. So I ask for you to step up and be accounted, for I believe it can be done, but we must do it together. Thank you, and God bless. Thank you.
Thank you. Amanda? While she's coming up, let me just mention a couple of things. Well, first of all, we want to thank everybody for coming out. This is really, really great. The Chicago Alliance Against Race and Political Repression is celebrating its 45th anniversary. And so that's the occasion here. And I can honestly say, without bending the truth at all, that this organization has been involved in winning freedom for people for the whole time of its existence, for the whole 45 years. They started with me 45 years ago. I used to be a political prisoner. But the most remarkable thing has happened within the last year, something that I've never seen before, and that is almost 50 people who were tortured and forced to confess the crimes that they did not commit have been released. And that is because of sisters like this. Amanda, she's been with us for almost 20 years. She has been a fighter. She's not a victim of torture. She has been subjected to torture, but she has become a freedom fighter. Amanda.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon to you. I'm so happy to be here. My name is Armanda Shackelford. I'm the mother of Gerald Reed. He's a tortured victim. Gerald Reed has been in prison for 27 years. His case is back in court. His case has been back in court for 6 years. My son was tortured by the Chicago Police Department in 1990. He was arrested. No, he wasn't arrested at first. He was taken in for questioning. But the questioning ended up being charged with two crimes. He kept telling them that he did not commit these crimes. On the first night of his arrest, they took him out, put him in a car, handcuffed, and he was at the 61st and Racine Police Station. They took him so far in that car, pulled into an alley, and told him to get out of the car. He did what he was told to do. They took his handcuffs off and told him that he was free, he could run. So he said, Mama, he said, I knew if I had ran, he was going to shoot me. And their explanation to that, if they had shot him, that was because he was trying to flee, trying to get away. So what he did, what they didn't want him to do, he got back in the car and sat down. One of the officers took his gun, put it to my son's head, and told him, when you get back to the station, you sign those papers. So he didn't argue with them, because he wasn't in no position to be arguing with anybody. He was out there by himself with the people that's got a sign on their car that say, we serve and protect. So when he got back to the station, he wouldn't sign the papers. And all these things that the police do to any of our members, any of our family, they don't do it in the daytime. At that time, they didn't. Now they do it whenever they get ready. But back then, they would do it late at night, where couldn't nobody hear them. Now, police can hear them because they have a code of silence. They stick with each other. If they see one of them doing a crime, do they say anything? No. They stick up for each other. But on the second night of my son's arrest, that's when the torture took place. They had him handcuffed to a chair. And Detective Breska kicked him, kicked that chair. That chair fell over. One of the legs on that chair broke. So they finally brought in another chair. And my son said he finally was able to get up off the floor with no assistance. And before he got up off the floor, Detective Breska beat that leg, his right leg. And years before, in 1985, now the incident with the police happened in 1990. In 1985, my son had gotten shot. And to put his leg back together, put the bone together, they put a rod in that leg to hold it together until it healed. On the second night of his arrest, Detective Breska beat on that leg so he broke that rod in that leg. Now, this is 1990, right? They sentenced my son to life in prison without parole. It took them 27 years to decide to do the surgery on that leg. But for 27 years, my son was in pain every day. Nothing was done. They took him to U of I. They said that they was going to do the surgery. They changed their mind. So about 2 years later, this was like maybe 5 years ago. 3 years ago, they switched to a different hospital, Dreyer University Hospital, out in Aurora, Illinois. And that doctor worked with my son, did all the tests that was necessary for him, and found out that that leg was broken the second time. So that's twice. So they finally did the surgery year before last, the day before Thanksgiving. But they didn't keep him there overnight. They sent him back to Stateville. He had to ride in that car, handcuffed to that seat, and just had surgery. This was major surgery. He had 40-some stitches in his right leg, from his hip to his knee. They took him in to the hospital area at Stateville Prison, put him in the bed. And he said when he woke up, he realized he still had his street clothes on. And he decided to, wasn't nobody there to assist him. So he decided to try to get out of his street clothes by himself. And he stepped down on his left leg. Now, that was the good leg. But by him still being under anesthesia, he didn't realize that the right leg was still numb. So he got his pant leg out of that right leg. And he stepped down on that right leg. And he hit the floor. Because the leg was numb. He didn't have no feelings in that leg. And when he hit the floor, almost all of those stitches that was in his leg, they busted open. So when they came in and found him, they put him back in the bed. And his clothes was soaking wet with blood. They kept him in the hospital for almost a year because of what they had did. They had made a mistake and left him without supervision. So they had told the doctors and the nurses had told him there that he was not going to leave the hospital until he go home, because they felt bad for what they did, and they was afraid that he was going to file a lawsuit. As long as they kept him in that hospital, he could not file no lawsuit. So an emergency came up where they needed that bed. So that's why he was moved out of the hospital. Almost a year in there. But you know what? I thank God. I thank God for being God. Because that's who I believed in. And I kept telling my son, don't give up. Because that's what the devil wants you to do. You can't give up. Your case have come too far. The Lord has blessed you with two great lawyers. And they got his case in court. His case looks so good, you all. And I owe it all to God. Because what he has done. And how there has been days when he has called me and told me that he was ready to give up. He said, one day, Mama, I came right there. I said, don't you dare. I dare you to give up. God has brought you this far, and you cannot turn around. I refuse to let you turn around. And you're not going to give up. God has been too good to you. And he told me, he said, Mama, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that because he has been good. His next court date is the 10th of July. But like I say, his case has been in court 6 years. They never had any evidence, none. And if you think about it, anybody in your family that has ever experienced torture from the police department, that's because they never had any evidence to prove that these people did the crime. So to make themselves look good, they torture them into signing whatever they want them to. They write everything out. They type everything out. So all they have to do is sign it. But they didn't only torture him physically. They tortured him mentally, told him that he was going to die in prison. Detective Keel told him that he was going to die in prison. And I'm sorry to say that he died in February. So don't ever announce that someone is going to leave here, because only one person can do that, and that's God. But, and I also told Gerald that He was going to send me to an early grave. And I told Gerald, I wish you had let me know that. No one is going to send me anywhere, only God. That's the only person that's going to take me away from here. And I thank God that I'm still here. And it's a blessing. I have aches and pains now, but I'm still here. And my son is still here. But you know what? I wish we had CPAC at the time of my son's arrest, because my son wouldn't be in prison. He would be at home or wherever, enjoying life. CPAC, that's what we need. We need CPAC, and we need it now, not tomorrow. We need it now. Please, please, please talk to your aldermen. Get in contact with that so-called mayor. Yeah. If you want to call him that and let him know. Yeah. Sign for CPAC, because we need it.
All right. Amanda. All right. Yeah. When I say fight back, you say CPAC. Fight back.
CPAC.
I can't hear you. Fight back.
CPAC.
Fight back.
CPAC.
I said fight back.
CPAC.
Fight back.
CPAC.
Fight back.
CPAC.
We're going to do this, right?
So this event today is being held as part of our People Power Weekend. Yesterday, Saturday, we had a panel featuring some victims of police tortures and their families. And I would like to just take a second now to recognize those panelists who are in the room. So if you could all please stand up. All right, up next we have Bakari the Rapper for CPAC.
When I say CPAC, y'all say fight back, CPAC.
Fight back.
CPAC. When I say CPAC, y'all say fight back, CPAC. CPAC.
My name is Eldred Bokari. I'm a member of Trinity United Church of Christ. And I want y'all to practice something real, with me real quick. When I say they can't shut us down, they try to shut you down, I want y'all to say, no, no, no. Try that out for me. Oh, that's good. Let me hear y'all just a little bit louder. All right, let's try that. They can't shut us down. They want to shut you down. They try to shut you down. But we shut it down, no, no, no. They can't shut us down. They try to shut you down. They try to shut you down, but we shut it down. How many times have you turned on the news? Fox enemies trying to consume my energy, try to feed me all these lies, and they wonder why. They want to see this black man cry, mental homicide. But I ain't going to give up. Y'all got to come a little strong. You want to see this black man fall to the floor. If they planning on closing the door, I got a spirit that keeps me lifted and giving the fuck. The Lord willing, I want to get it like the prophets did it. Messages turn to lessons if you just listen. How we going to make change if everybody adapt and want to start a revolution, but nobody wants a captain? CPAC means we got to fight back. Says CPAC means? I said CPAC means? Fight back, fight back, cause they can't shut us down, they wanna shut you down, hey, they wanna shut you down, they wanna shut you down, but no, 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 they can't shut us down, they wanna shut you down, they wanna shut you down, but we shut us down. Yo, how many people have to die for these folks to realize that it's wrong when you flee home and may never come back? In fact, let's look at the ones who are never there, having to stare at a wall 24/7 up in solitary. Is it just me who gives a shh? Knowing there's people with this master plan, plotting like Stan, demanding attention from politicians that can give to. If my kids live or die, they spreading lies, saying, how could this have happened? They told me eyes are just eyes. It doesn't matter if they don't look like mine. Shh. They told me eyes are just eyes. It doesn't matter if they don't look like mine. But let's realize the situation. With all the problems we're facing, there's no time for us humans to be complacent and waiting for these four supermen and swoop in and save our nation. Let's chill on a parade and debating with each other. We need to take this back to families. After ham and cheese, rhymes about what I got. The rock, wop, and dime show while chrome spinning. Offending women while we're living enough for the day. Hands shaking us cause we're trying to pray. Matter of fact, let's take it back to the days when being black men, it was time to act. Just as Martin Hampton Tubman to Shakur, it took more than four to endure this jaded war that's bent on hate. The only answer is there's no time to waste because it's our future's fate. At stake. Woke in the middle and I couldn't sleep. Mind racing, couldn't breathe. Shots fired the police. Two sirens, they cut the streets. Two young thinking in the back and heat. Hear that issue and I want to weep. But what do I know? I'm too young. It was just a part of my reality. Getting out of sleep. So many caught in this systematic lottery that probably the one who's dead or gone is in a better home. Far from this bitter world where culture's thrown away. And why would you want to stay when all you do is pay? But I was targeted as an adolescent. Guessing what my life should be. Sheep in a society that wouldn't acknowledge the God in me. But hard is my philosophy. Pursuing it honorably until I felt it was worth more than the crumbs that were giving me. See many that choose this lesson life. A constant struggle for what's wrong and what's right. But this is my night. Upon these stars I might just lose my revolution. But until then I'm choosing to move in God's way. Till that day that'll we rise and no lies will be handed to our children living. In its unfit combined blind existence. Where the mission is submission. Think about it. But they can't shut us down. They want to shut you down. No. They want to shut you down. But we shut it down. No. They can't shut us down. They want to shut you down. But we shut it down. Don't let them shut you down. Thank you.
So up next, I would like to introduce Hatem Abudeya from the Palestinian Community Action Network. So give it up for Hatem.
I've been in Chicago my whole life, but I've only had the honor for the first time yesterday to be here at Trinity United, the church of such principled and progressive faith leaders as Reverend Jeremiah Wright and Reverend Otis Moss. The church of so many of you wonderful people here. I'm also honored to be representing my organizations, the Arab American Action Network and the United States Palestinian Community Network, to say welcome home to all the torture survivors, and also to say just as loudly, now let's free all the rest. Arabs and Palestinians in this city have been supporting the Chicago Alliance for 40 years. And in the past 5 years, we've joined the Alliance directly in the fight against police crimes and killings of black people in this city. We are in unconditional support and solidarity with the movement for black lives in this country, with all of you, members and leaders of the most important social justice movement in this country in decades. The struggle against police crimes knows no political party. I was reminded by the brave survivor, Mr. Banks, who spoke here yesterday, that Daley II was the Cook County State's Attorney who covered it up when Burge and other cops were torturing hundreds of black and Latino men. And we know that the current mayor tried to cover up the killing of Laquan McDonald. They are both Democrats, both complicit, and both must be held accountable. But we also know that we are living in the era of Trump, the most racist, sexist, homophobic, anti-immigrant, anti-worker president we've ever had, an actual white supremacist in the White House. And so this fight is even more urgent now in the context of the U.S. Attorney General's targeting of protesters like us and his rollbacks on federal oversight of local law enforcement. Arabs and Palestinians know torture as well. Our people have faced torture for 70 years by the Israeli government in our stolen homeland of Palestine. We also know that the Alliance and Angela Davis and so many black people and institutions came out in support of our leader, Rasmi Yehuda, when she was facing U.S. government repression for almost 4 years before being deported from the U.S. last year. I know that our communities have some challenges to unity, but we are making great progress in our solidarity with each other. So much that Black Palestinian solidarity has become an internationally known and used hashtag on social media. In Chicago, we pledge to demand with you the freedom of all tortured survivors and to fight for and win CPAC. Because as Alliance leader Joe Eckelson said yesterday, it's the most important piece of legislation in the entire country. Yours is the most important organizing fight in the entire U.S. Democratic control, community control of the police in a city like Chicago can lead to the same in other cities, and to democratic community control of so many other institutions like education and healthcare that will make the U.S. a better place to live for so many tens of millions. And we are with you until victory. Thank you.
The next speaker, Ace Nampule, is a leader in the Black Lives Matter movement. I met her many years ago. We've become comrades in struggle. This is a youth movement. Well, somebody once said, this is the youth movement that we were waiting on. And I told her, no, we were not waiting. We were keeping the trenches warm. Because we haven't been waiting for 45 years for anybody. But it's been rough. And what makes it so rough sometimes, I remember Angela once said, we're not immortal. I mean, that was a crude reminder, right? We're not immortal. We're going to die. And it's so important to see young people coming up, taking up this struggle. So important. And she's been a very consistent fighter for freedom. And I'm so glad to see her and her movement on the scene. And we're going to work together. And they're going to be our future. Ace Nampule.
Thank you, Frank. I'm here and we're here because of y'all. Y'all have led us, continue to teach us, and we're honored to be in these streets with all of you. Yesterday marked the 5-year anniversary of Michael Wesley, who was killed by CPD on Father's Day as he was leaving his grandmother's house. Yesterday, after participating in the People's Forum on Police Crimes and Torture, we held a banquet honoring moms whose children were killed by police. This included the mother of Carrie Ball from St. Louis, Richard Risher from LA, the mother of Justice Howell from Zion, the mother of Cordell Quinn from St. Paul, Minnesota, the mother of Pierre Lori from Chicago, the mother of Michael Wesley, the mother of Ronald Johnson, all from Chicago. Tomorrow is the funeral of Maurice Granton, who was killed June 6th, not too far from here. A father of two, whose children are now experiencing their first Father's Day without him. Tomorrow also begins the civil trial for Robert Realmo, who's the CPD officer who murdered Quintonio LeGreer and Betty Jones the day after Christmas. Leading up to this year's Father's Day, we in Chicago have been embroiled in historic fights with City Hall. You may recall some of the news coverage that happened over the last month. We have organized demanding no to a new $95 million police academy located on the West Side. We say no more divestment from our communities. Rahm Emanuel closed over 50 schools, half of our mental health care centers, and there is no way in hell, I'm sorry if I'm not supposed to say hell, but there's no way in hell that we're going to allow a new $95 million police academy be built in our city. The FOP held a protest at City Hall about 2 weeks ago, and we outnumbered them 3-1. We have the power and the strength to move this moment forward, but we have to continue being in the streets. We have to continue organizing in our communities. We cannot get seduced into this politician trickery of believing that the Democrats somehow have more to offer than the Republican Party. We in Chicago have seen the results of Democratic misleadership. It was Rahm Emanuel who conducted the crimes against humanity against our people by conducting the largest public school closing in the United States history. And who won the reparations ordinance, the first reparations ordinance for torture survivors in the country? We did. We did that. And it's our power, our mobilizing power, which is going to win us a country and a city that will no longer allow the torture of our brothers and sisters and the murder of our children. But we have to keep organizing. We have to make the connections between what is happening on the border with the ICE raids and the fact that Chicago has the largest juvenile prison in the country. These things are connected. And now is the time to make those connections as Trump and the ultra-right continue to push forward with what many are calling and what Barbara Ransme has taught me to call as proto-fascism. We do not have the luxury to be seduced into the misleadership of politicians. Our power is in ourselves. Our power is in our community. We must keep organizing. For CPAC, we must keep organizing to overturn this entire system, and we must keep organizing to create the type of society where our children and our loved ones are no longer harmed by the system, but where one is created that gives life and protects life and invests in life. And we can do that. When we fight, we win.
Thank you, Aislinn. Before I introduce the next speaker, I just want to talk really quickly about the moment that we're in with CPAC. Recently, the City Council has hosted these 5 hearings on police accountability. And of the 4 ordinances that were on the table, CPAC was the one at every single hearing that had the most support from people in the community, from the north side to the south side to the west side. And we have 50,000 supporters like yourselves all across the city in every single ward, from Jefferson Park to Inglewood. And that's because we're in the community every Saturday tabling, and we're actually doing this at a grassroots level. So up next, I would like to introduce Stan Willis, NCBL lawyer who crafted the legislation creating the Illinois Torture Commission and founder of Black People's Coalition Against Torture. So give it up for Stan Willis.
Two things. Back in 2004, we have been trying to get John Burge indicted for many, many years. I was at home nurturing a broken ankle back in 2004, and I found out that one of our torture victims that we had gotten off of death row, Aaron Patterson, had been indicted by the feds. So I invited my comrades to come to my apartment so we can figure out what to do with Aaron Patterson. So we had a discussion. as they were leaving, I told them that I thought we should take the Bedarn Burge case international. And they looked at me, and I think they thought that that broken ankle had gone through my brain. But I had done some experience with the international community for some years ago, because we had supported the liberation movements on the mother continent, and we knew how powerful it is when you could raise an issue in the international community. So I tried to figure out how to do it. I didn't have a clue. And I learned how to do it, and our first attempt was with the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights. And that's a kind of a United Nations, but it's in the Western Hemisphere. And we took the case there. And they gave us a hearing. And then I was reached out to by a group called the International Red Network. And they asked me to go to the United Nations with them to raise the issue. And I went with them. I raised the issue of John Burge. And we went before the various treaties that the United States has adopted. Not many, but they have adopted a treaty. CAT, we call it, Treaty Against Torture, CERT, Treaty on Racial Discrimination, and not many others. So I went there, and I went to the United Nations, and I raised the John Burge issue. And the United States has to come there because they've signed the treaty, and a bunch of us were there to challenge the United States. And that committee, in their concluding observations, told the United States to look into the torture of black men and boys in Chicago. Within a month after we left there, within a month after they issued their position, I got a call from an assistant U.S. attorney over in the federal court, because I do most of my work there. He said, "Stan, I've been assigned to go after John Burge. Can you come and talk to us about it? Because we don't know what to do." I said, "I'll be there." We were there quickly. Unfortunately, by the time they got it, all the statute of limitations had run, except the statute of limitation that says if you lie in a federal deposition, you can be indicted. And that was it. And they indicted him for lying because he lied all the time. That was the easy one. And he went to prison. He got four years, which is insane. And we found out recently he just got out of prison, and the Illinois Supreme Court gave him his pension. And we know, because we do this, you know, I've been suing cops for a long time, that if a police officer commits a crime while on duty, you don't get a pension. So they gave him his pension. I was so angry, I started to go to the Supreme Court and cuss him out, but I didn't want to lose my license. So he got his pension. That's just briefly. But the issue for me now is we could keep raising these issues. I've raised the issue, now that I know how to raise the issue before the United Nations, we're going to take advantage of that. We're going to build communities so they can raise issues. I've raised the issue of stakeholders report on the issue of political prisoners in the United States. That was raised. And we're going to follow that because we got political prisoners who have been locked down since the 1960s, most of them Black Panther Party members and others. And we're going to get those brothers out. So we know how to use now the international community. We know how to raise issues before the United Nations, and United Nations will, you know, make a decision on that. But it's very powerful because the United States, and we learned this when we were supporting the liberation movements in the mother continent, they don't like to be embarrassed. The United States like to point fingers at everybody else and you're violating human rights, you're violating human rights. But when we raise it as citizens of this country, then the United States has a problem. And so we'd have to keep raising it. We have to free all the prisoners that John Burge indicted. All of them have to be free. And we are going to keep going to the United Nations, raising these issues, and we're going to teach community people how to go to the United Nations to raise these issues internationally so that the world community can know what's happening in the United States with our brothers and our sisters too. Thank you for listening to me.
Give it up, everyone, for Jalen and Julius.
My name is Jayla, and my friend's name is Julius. We are Chicago artists, and we hope that we can contribute a message of hope and love and perseverance as a part of this program today. So,
good afternoon, everybody. I'm Julius. I'd just like to, start off by saying it's really an honor to be here. When I was asked, could I perform at the rally today, I was shocked, because I've always heard growing up stories about Angela Davis, and like I knew who she was like ever since high school, something that I had to go out of my way to learn. And I manage this ice cream shop. It's kind of like on the north side. It's in Evanston, it's like right on the border, like Wilmette and Evanston. People I manage there, I was telling all of them, like, hey, like, yeah, I'm about to perform one of my pieces at this church that Angela Davis is speaking at. And then they looked at me, they're like, Angela Davis? I was like, you don't know who Angela Davis is? And then in my eyes, I was like, oh my gosh, like, how do you not know that? But then I started thinking about it, like, all right, these are all North Shore, like, kids who go to, majority of them, just come from schools that are like 96% white. I'm like the only black person they really ever meet, honestly. And then it really started shaking, like coming down to me. It's like, yeah, they don't want to teach this type of history in school. They don't want kids to know about just all the political prisoners, all the things that America's kind of ashamed about. And they don't want to teach that in schools, but yet they want to teach you about like things about like the Louisiana Purchase, and like they don't even teach you like the backside behind that, which is like the Louisiana Purchase happened because of a slave rebellion that happened in Haiti. But yet, because I'm Haitian, that's the reason why I know that. And then it started really opening my eyes to just like race in America. And so I made this piece, it's just about being Haitian and how it's all just about where you're from. And so I'm gonna get into it. It's a race in America. I'm on that rat race trying to rake it up. It's all about race in America, and they want to erase my heritage. It's all about race in America. Man, I'm born and raised in America. I'm that raisin in the sun. You can only try to relate to us. It's all about race in America. No matter the place, they're going to stare you up, look you in your face and say, where you from? They either going to hate or going to share the love. Say I'm Haitian, but really my parents was. Barely ever make trips to Caribbean. My dad asked it, boy, you forget where your blood? No, I didn't. Just know I speak several tongues. WMTPT, I was never dumb. Grandma, mother, koto, since you won. Liba, meme, kie, gentil garçon. She didn't want me out here like a vagabond. All my homies with me like I'm Shaka Khan. We all black as hell, but I'm the darkest one. So tell, pull up, pray they don't spark the gun. Iron on them like they Tony Stark or something. It's a race in America. I'm on that rat race trying to rake it up. It's all about race in America, and they want to erase my heritage. It's all about race in America. Man, I'm born and raised in America. I'm that raisin in the sun. You can only try to relate to us. And it's a pretty short piece, but I thought it fit the situation pretty well. Yeah. And like I'm saying, it's an honor to be here. Thank you so much.
So, so my name is Jayla, and the thing that I wanted to bring was a piece of poetry. It's called Hubris. And the conversation it's about is how in a system, in a society where our value is contingent upon identity factors such as race, no one really wins. No one really is able to connect to each other and find commonality and really experience all the love and connection that is so possible for us. And that's the thing that makes me the saddest. So this piece, Hubris, is about how darkness as a concept was twisted into something evil, was twisted into something that meant demon, that meant darkness. And that's where it started from. And that's what we're working against, because we are at war, right? We're at war in so many ways, but that's not only physical and against each other in our physical bodies, intellectually, spiritually, in our souls, we are at war ideologically. The way we think of ourselves, we are at war. The way other people think of us, we're at war. And so this piece, again, is called Hubris, so I hope you enjoy it.
Darkness is danger was born of a time before awareness, when an empty and dim being desired so irrevocably to be as bright as the sun. And so he waited until the great star laid to rest so that he may hunt for this light. And that's when he set his eyes upon the wondrous night sky. And up he went to skin the stars from the atmosphere and form a crown out of the constellations, to shove celestial bodies in his scepter sealed with sloppy kisses, impregnate the black holes and skewer the planets with needle and thread so that he may lasso them into orbit. And all of this until there was nearly nothing luminescent or lovely left, no moon to guide the tides, no blazing asteroid to wish upon, no stars to twinkle in an eye, just somewhat of a void, emptiness. And he will roam the cosmos forever, looking to pillage sublime beauty, and he will never glow bright enough. Still, he will never be the star he wishes he were, because he forgot that stardust was made into cells long ago. He is master of none, not even himself, but the fear of darkness. Darkness as dull, darkness as pain, darkness as demon, darkness as nothing, darkness as danger, that he can claim. Thank you.
All right, thank you so much. So up next, I would like to introduce another cultural act, some more poetry. I'd like to invite up Maya Arcila.
Hi, everyone. Again, my name is Maya Arcila. I'm the chairperson at Anakbay in Chicago. We're a national democratic Filipino youth and student organization fighting for liberation in the Philippines. And so if you don't know, there's currently basically a dictator in the Philippines, Duterte, who has already killed 20,000 people in his war on drugs. And that equates to about one in every 30 minutes. And so in the same way that we see police violence in this country, police violence isn't foreign to us in our homeland either. And so that's what this poem's going to be a little bit about. I am the daughter of workers. Grew up hiding behind the cash register, a single mom who did what she could to keep a roof over our heads, food in our bellies, but the pay was never enough. I am the daughter of workers, with a father I never saw. See, it wasn't lack of love that prevented it, but our schedules never lined up. The family told me the cash in my bank, told me the factory cuts and burns he got were his way of saying he loved me. I am the daughter of workers. It is no wonder I rage, because this diaspora wasn't for us, but for the wealthy elite. 6,000 people leave the Philippines daily, and every dollar we send home, they want their cut. It's more fun in the Philippines, they said, where people who don't look like us fondle beaches, caress the waters, buy up lands that do not belong to them. But our people come home tortured after years of slavery, come home in boxes to their families who never knew the new wrinkles in their face. It's more fun in the Philippines, they said, where fascists go on killing sprees, 20,000 lying dead in the street, where mothers only return home to say their last goodbyes, where sometimes getting high is easier than the pain of hunger, where even rumors of this leaves four-year-old children dead, while government officials known as drug lords walk free. It's more fun in the Philippines, they said, where Marawi looks like a post-apocalyptic film, where foreign investors are deciding precisely which cut they get of this rubble lined with gold, where indigenous children learn how to calculate exactly when the bomb will hit and how fast they should run. It's more fun in the Philippines, they said, where activism is another word for shoot to kill, where speaking out must be a crime, where priests are apparently such a threat that under this administration, three have already been slaughtered. It's more fascist, more repressive, more deadly in the Philippines, we said, but this country is no better. 95 million of our taxpayers' dollars for our cop academy to incarcerate, to torture, to murder black and brown bodies, while 16 shops and a videotape is apparently not enough to convict. 152 million of our taxpayers' dollars for bloodshed in the Philippines, while here in Chicago they close 50 schools, evict us from our housing, strip us from any means of survival. But let them tremble at the thought of the day we say no more, of the day we break free from these chains. For each person they kill, 1,000 more will rise up, will organize their demise of the world that is not built for us, and build anew. Let them tremble of the thought of the red horizon within our reach, of the power our fists hold, of this victory that is ours and ours alone. Let them tremble of the thought of the day that we will win. Thank you.